A speak-up culture is one in which people feel that it is both safe, psychologically safe, and worth it to share ideas, concerns, disagreements, and mistakes. Ideas, even if they're half-baked, which can make the firm or organization run better, be more innovative. Concerns, even if they're unpopular or personal. Disagreements, especially with senior leaders. And mistakes, believing it will lead to improvement and not punishment.
Welcome to the Leading Transformational Change podcast. Our passion is to help you lead and develop organizations with a remarkably healthy culture that can positively impact all of its stakeholders. Every other Thursday, we drop hour-long conversations with world-leading researchers and experts on culture, ethics, change, and leadership. My name is Tobias Sturluson, and I'm your host and the co-founder of Art Management. After giving a talk at a business event last week, I was asked what I have found is often the first telltale sign of an unhealthy or toxic culture. My answer, silence. In my personal and professional experiences of organizations with a severe lack of cultural health, there has never been a safe environment for people to speak up. The reasons for the silence have differed. A domineering or manipulative leader. A toxic positivity. A lack of action. The reasons for the silence have differed. A domineering or manipulative leader. Toxic positivity. And a lack of action on concerns raised are a few examples. Whatever the reason for the silence, I'm confident that you can't have a healthy culture without a speak-up culture. However, I also understand it's much easier to talk about than achieve. Many times we might as leaders even be unaware of the silence we create around us. That's why we give significant focus to that topic on this podcast. We've learned about giving voice to values by Professor Mary Gentile, Competent Courage with Professor Jim Dietert, Radical and Compassionate Candor with Kim Scott, and How to Create a Listening Culture with Professor Megan Wright. In this episode, I discuss the topic of speak-up culture with a new friend who has helped numerous organizations think better about their leadership, purpose, and culture. Stephen Shedlitsky worked with Simon Sinek as the head of training and development, inspired by the vision to improve people's work experience worldwide. He is the author of a forthcoming book, Speak Up Culture, When Leaders Truly Listen, People Step Up, which is launching in October. His personal story of overcoming a stutter gives a unique perspective of finding our voice in our organizations. I hope you will find our conversation insightful, practical, and helpful. But now, without further ado, let's jump into my conversation with Stephen Shedlitsky. Stephen, it's a great privilege to have you on the podcast today.
The privilege, Tobias, is truly mine. It's been a delight getting to know you and great to be on having this conversation today.
We are both, I think, really passionate about a subject that when we think about building healthier cultures, which is what this podcast is really about, is at some point along the journey, you just realize that a really key part of building a healthier culture, a more ethical culture, whatever you want to put into that, is having a speak-up culture. It's having an environment where people actually feel free and safe to raise their concerns. And so I'm so glad to have a conversation with you. I'm so glad that you've written a book on the topic. And I just think it's something that we can't talk about enough. And so, but first to ask you, what made you become interested in the topic of speaking up?
Yeah, so, I mean, first and foremost, one of my favorite myths around both psychological safety and a speak-up culture is that it means that we only talk about nice stuff, you know, sunshine, rainbows, unicorns, and lollipops. And that's simply not true. I think a hallmark of having a speak-up culture is our ability and willingness to talk about the hardest conversations, to have hard feedback, to talk about, I wonder if our behaviors here really match with our definition of what it means to be ethical here. And for those conversations to be welcome, to be safe, as opposed to punishing people for dare challenging leadership in their behavior and decision making. So, you know, first and foremost, that's one of my favorite sort of myths to bust about psychological safety in a speak up culture, is it's not a culture of nice, it's actually a culture of kind. And when we have a culture of kind, we can have the hardest, most truthful, honest conversations. And then just for me personally, sort of the impetus of why I wrote this book and how I got sort of into this topic is I grew up with a stutter. So I know what it feels like to have something to say, but to choose to remain silent, more so because of a fear of speaking and a fear of, quite frankly, stammering and making a fool of myself. Ironically, I now speak for a living and still do have a stutter. I married a speech pathologist. Good choice, not just for me, but for my kids. And then, you know, in my career, Tobias, having experiences where I felt I was in cultures, whether they be with organizations I worked with as a client, as a team member, where there was makeup culture, and it's glorious. our willingness, our ability to have the hardest conversations that lead to close relationships, trust, innovation. And then I've also been parts of relationships and teams where there isn't a speak up culture, and it's kind of awful. It isn't good for the health of individuals and teams and the organization from a health and well-being perspective, nor from the perspective of innovation and teamwork as well.
So as I've understood it, of course, you worked for years, and I think still do, in part together with Simon Sinek, and of course now you're doing incredible work through your own company and with lots of different companies and organizations around the world. And as you reflect on your work, as you started working with different companies, is there one example, for example, where you just encountered this sense of silence, this sense that people weren't really able or felt safe to bring up ideas, failures, concerns?
So there was one organization that I did a leadership keynote for not so long ago. It was during the pandemic, and it was over virtual Zoom or whatever the platform du jour was. And I remember, as I often do, and I'm sure you do as well, before you give a talk or do a workshop with a company, you'll often have a pre-engagement conversation. And so I had a pre-gig call with the logistics organizer from the event and the executive sponsor. Now, the organization I was working with at a national level kept an entire nation safe. I'll just say that. They did very important work to ensure that an entire nation was safe. They employed about 20,000 people. Of those 20,000, 1,500 or so were people managers. And the conference that I was going to speak at was for people managers. I had the pre-engagement call. I met with the executive sponsor. I really liked him. Like, we read the same books. We listened to the same podcast. Like, I got along with him. I really thought highly of him as a leader. Which is interesting because it's one data point. It was one meeting. When it was finally a few weeks later, day for the event, I showed up early, as I often like to, because just the comments you hear from presenters before you, the questions that are asked during open Q&A, whether it's people coming off mute or typing in, that context is, you know, worth its weight in platinum. Like, it is brilliant. And so I had a chance to join early, and I joined as the same executive sponsor that I had spoken to was finishing up his prepared remarks. And his remarks were fine. You know, nothing stood out too high or low. Granted, I only listened to, you know, a handful of minutes of it. And then they opened to a Q&A portion. And during the Q&A, the second question that was asked was anonymous. And the question was something around the effect of, what is being done to combat manager work overload and burnout? Valid question. To which the executive sponsor said, well, we finished up this initiative 3 months ago. As far as I'm concerned, it's no longer an issue. Next question. And I went, oh, like facepalm. You know, like it wasn't with the intent to silence or shut down or shut up, you know, someone. It took courage to ask that question. It was done anonymously. But, you know, if I were that executive, you know, I would have been honest and said, you know, in truth, I'm surprised to hear that question again because of this initiative. But the mere fact that you have had to ask this question means that our work is yet to be done here. And my promise or my commitment to you is by the next time we have our next town hall meeting, you know, in 3 months, 6 months, whatever it might be, my hope, my commitment is that we don't have to ask this question again. But if we do, please ask it, because it means that we haven't solved for it. So it was just this like little micro, that's not an issue to me. Well, just because it isn't an issue to you doesn't mean it isn't an issue to the, you know, 5, 10, or thousands of people in your span of care.
I think based on that example, that, I mean, when we talk about the speak up culture, I think all of our listeners understand that we need people to speak up so that we can get the best ideas on the table, so that we can learn when we make mistakes, that we actually talk about those mistakes, so people are not trying to hide them, but they're open and honest about them, so that we can actually learn and fix things, not push blame, but fix things. And so that when there are concerns, whether, for example, our leadership is not as it needs to be, or we are making decisions or priorities that are out of whack with our values, or whatever that is, that we actually get those concerns up on the table. So I think that's something that everyone can agree on and say, yes, that is important. But then the next question then becomes, so why is it then so hard? Why is it then that we so often don't actually have that? And I'm thinking about a recent conversation with a large multinational company where they were working on a speak up campaign, like across the company, to get people to speak up more and so on. And so why do we have issues with this if it is something that is so important?
So, I mean, so first and foremost, you know, a definition of what I mean by a speak-up culture, and we've danced around this, but I think it serves to just put it in plain English. So a speak-up culture is one in which people feel that it is both safe, psychologically safe, and worth it to share ideas, concerns, disagreements, and mistakes. Ideas, even if they're half-baked, which can make the firm or organization run better, be more innovative. Concerns, even if they're unpopular or personal. Disagreements, especially with senior leaders. And mistakes, believing it will lead to improvement and not punishment. Now, it is hard to speak up because we are biologically wired to offer those who have more power than us or more influence than us with deference. You know, we can talk smack about a leader behind their back, and then as soon as they walk into the room, hello ma'am, hello sir, so nice to see you, because they literally have influence or power over us. So one of the things that I throw out in the book is an equation for culture. So culture equals, in brackets, values multiplied by behavior to the power of influence. So of course, organizations ought to have values, but if you define values and leave it there, you're at risk of having an Enron fiasco, which is where you've articulated values, you just don't live them. So Enron, the organization with a great accounting scandal a number of years ago, their values were communication, respect, integrity, which is hilarious, and excellence. Personally, for me, Tobias, I think excellence is my favorite, least favorite value, because it's meaningless. Like, do me a favor, more excellence this afternoon, please. Like, of course, right on it. It's meaningless, right? And the strength of our values and the strength of our culture is the degree to which we live them, which is why I'm a fan of articulating values, or at least behaviors underneath those values, as verbs or action phrases. So excellence could transform into do more of your best work. Now we're talking. Now we're getting somewhere, you know? Respect, treat people as the human beings that they actually are, you know? So this will help us actually behave into them. And then So it's values multiplied by behavior, because if you have great values but don't live them, anything multiplied by a zero is a zero. Worse, if you either don't have clear values or you do have clear values but you don't live them, anything multiplied by a negative is a negative. You can actually have a toxic deleterious culture if you live counter to your espoused or stated values. And then values multiplied by behavior is raised to the power of influence, because the more influence you have in a culture, the more your individual values and behavior impact that culture. It means more if the most senior leader lives counter to or has values that challenge the values of the organization than it does someone that we hired in a junior role last week, because we are a hierarchical species. So it's hard to speak up because we're biologically wired not to. We're biologically wired to keep safe, don't get noticed, don't put yourself out there, because it comes with risk. There is no such thing as speaking up without risk. And so, you know, I even spoke with Amy Edmondson about this. It isn't the fearless organization. It's about leaders creating less fear in their organization such that people feel it's both safe and worth the risk to speak up and share ideas, concerns, disagreements, and mistakes.
I think an important part of what you just said, and I think this is for leaders listening, that we need to assume that it's hard. We need to assume that it's not something that just happens on its own, but that silence is what happens on its own if we're not actually soliciting the feedback, if we're not really encouraging, making clear that it is safe here, and not just safe, but that it is encouraged, that people actually do come and bring things up. And I'm thinking, what are things that you see and that you've learned that leaders can actually do to send that message?
So you just hit on it perfectly, which is it's a virtuous cycle between two actions that ripple. And the two actions are encourage and reward. So in order to create a culture where people feel it's safe and worth it to speak up, you have to encourage people. You know, your voice matters. As I heard one very senior pilot who's a safety expert, this pilot's flown thousands and thousands of flights. Every time he flies a flight, he always says to his co-pilots and flight crew, "I've never flown a perfect flight, and today is no exception. I need to know what you see, I need to know what you hear, I need to know what you sense." It's creating the condition that your voice, your opinion, your experience matters, and I depend upon it. If leaders don't have that belief, it's going to be hard to generate a speak-up culture. Encourage could also mean going first, you know. Absent of receiving feedback, team, I'm going to give feedback to myself. How am I doing? Feedback could also be, it's very hard to just put people on the spot and say, "Tobias, can you give me feedback on my performance today?" Or I could use some quantitative metrics. I could say, "Hey, Tobias, on a scale of 0 to 10, how clear is my message today?" And if you say 10, I'm going to push you. I don't think you're telling me the truth. I want to improve. Right? And so it's doing everything in your power to just encourage, kind of like feeding a deer or a bird, like put your hand out. And then when they feed, you must reward that behavior, especially if people bring up news that's hard to hear. Reward doesn't mean an extrinsic reward like a bonus, a promotion, more pay, or a statue made in your honor. Reward is often intrinsic. Thank you for speaking up. Wow, that must have taken courage to share. I really appreciate it. We didn't implement your idea, but here's why from a strategic point of view. And thank you for bringing it up. We need more ideas and more concerns and contributions like that. Keep it up. So it's that, it's those two verbs, encourage and reward constantly. And the benefit of it is it ripples. So let's say you and I report into the same person. I speak up and share some really hard feedback or an idea that I've been ruminating on. And then we have lunch after and you're like, "How did it go?" And I'm like, "It was amazing. You know, it went well." They encouraged, like, it was you, because of that ripple, feel that it's more safe and more worth it for you to speak up. Similarly, if I report back and I say, "Either it was a bad Monday or just don't do it. It's not worth it." right? You will then be impacted from that ripple and that experience of encourage and reward as well.
Absolutely love that. And I think that's so, you gave some such practical advice. And I think if we actually just do these things, if we'll say thank you, if we'll say, like you said, that, oh, we didn't implement that, but thank you, and we did this instead. I mean, just getting back to people, because something that I've seen a lot in organizations is that a reason people don't speak up is because they don't feel that it's going to make a difference. And they have learned that it's not going to make a difference because when they spoke up earlier, nothing happened. And that's something that if we are in a situation like that, we really need to restore trust by being really intentional about giving that feedback and making sure that people know this is something that we celebrate here at this company. And I think another, so now we talked about the things that we can do to contribute to creating that positive culture of speaking up. So if we think from the other perspective, what are some of the things that leaders, as leaders, and I want to say, not, it's very easy to sit and point fingers at people, but I know as a leader myself, this is hard. This is hard work. And there are so many times that when someone who would report to me brings something up that is maybe challenging my leadership or something that is uncomfortable, I mean, it's very, very easy to kind of just react in a negative way and so on. And you really have to be thoughtful and intentional to make sure that you don't, and make sure that you react positively and thank people, even though you might not agree. And even though you might feel like that really kind of got a bit too close. But anyway, So what are things that we might do, even though it's not our intention to create a culture of silence, what are things that we might do that still contributes to that? And you gave an example earlier from that conference call or that keynote. But what are other things that we do that we might not be aware of?
Yeah, so I mean, one of the best things for leaders to do, especially when they hear bad news or news counter to their point of view, or when someone speaks up and it seemingly slows things down. You know, we live in these times of great uncertainty and change, and, you know, stress is higher and we got to move forward and make decisions. And so what do you do when someone brings up a point of view that actually is a step back? You know, and I think it's fair for leaders to say, well, this is inconvenient to hear, but I think you're onto something, or let's dig in further. Anyone else see what so-and-so sees? You know, let's pause here, because if we make a decision to move forward on bad assumptions, you know, crap in, crap out. Like, let's pause and let's dig in and actually take a step back in order before we try to take steps forward. Because if we do take a smart, strategic, reflective step back, it allows us to take a leap forward. There's a few things that come to mind here. One is the great barriers to a speak up culture are gaslighting and toxic positivity. Those are two of them. And the other thing that comes up is the 2x2 framework that we've created for what is a speak up culture versus what is not a speak up culture. So when I first started writing this book, I fully admit that I thought I was just rebranding psychological safety. I'm a huge fan of Amy Edmondson's work. I'm a huge fan of psychological safety. I saw a couple of issues, though. One is I felt as though we put a white lab coat on a very human experience, and I thought it was a bit of a misbrand. I really wanted to make psychological safety more accessible and easier for leaders to understand and enact upon. And as I began delving into the research, it's actually not just psychological safety that creates a speak-up culture. It's the two dynamics of, is it safe and is it worth it? And there's another lesser-known body of work called perception of impact, which is it worth it? Is my speaking up going to yield any positive result, make any difference? So the 2x2 framework of this, and as Kim Scott has taught us, every worthwhile challenge has a 2x2 framework to it. The top right is high safety, high impact. I speak up because I feel it is safe and worth it. Excellent, right? Part of the challenge with this is it's two fields of perception. It's a perception of safety, a perception of impact. So again, you and I could be in the same culture, work for the same leader, or work for different leaders, and have completely two different experiences of that culture, and we're both right. So that's something to be mindful of. An interesting dynamic is, well, I'll first go to the worst one, which is low safety, low impact, which is an unhappy marriage between fear and apathy. And I've been there. It's no fun. You don't speak up because it's not safe to do so, and it's not worth it, right? You're both punished, and it doesn't lead to any meaningful or positive change. An interesting one is high safety but low impact, which is because of a systemic issue, bureaucracy, or a change in habit for someone that would be too hard. You might feel safe to speak up, but you don't feel it will lead to any meaningful change or impact. This is like saying to a friend, you should stop eating chocolate cake every day. It's not good for your health. And they go, yeah, right? It's like you feel safe bringing it up, but you don't feel it's going to make any meaningful change. What's really interesting, I find, is low safety but high impact, where there isn't psychological safety, but the stakes are simply too high. This is where Ed Pearson found himself at Boeing with the 737 MAX, where he saw that there were too many production issues on the line with vendors, too many orders coming in. And from his point of view, they were going to be putting a plane in the air that wasn't fit and safe to fly. Though he did not feel safe speaking up, he felt he had no other choice and ended up becoming a whistleblower after two planes went down and 346 people died. So to hit your question head on, which I know you asked a few minutes ago, so what are some of the things that inhibit people from speaking up? Two psychological phenomena that contribute to this are gaslighting and toxic positivity. So gaslighting is when you literally deny somebody else's human experience, either through coercion or manipulation or a straight up lie, and say, you don't feel that way. Or this contract is designed with your best interest at heart, even though it's not, right? Gaslighting is an amazing way to completely stifle the speak up culture and leave your people questioning their confidence and their sanity. Toxic positivity, which is a sort of a far more subtle cousin to gaslighting, is an environment, and Susan David speaks a lot about this with her work in emotional agility, where we're only allowed to talk about the future and only allowed to talk about positive good vibes only, which is, and we saw a huge precedence of this in COVID, where people were really struggling and grieving. Grieving, you know, losing freedom and losing their life previously, and as opposed to saying, "Hey, let's actually dig into those emotions," which is hard but worthwhile work to do. Leaders just pretended they didn't exist and say, "Let's only talk about the future." Well, how about the fact that we just laid off 30% of our workforce? Can we talk about that? No. Do you want to be part of the solution or do you want to be part of the problem? Let's talk about the future. So those two phenomena definitely lower safety and lower impact of is it worth it and is it safe to speak up here?
So helpful. And I've definitely seen both of those at play. And I think, like you said, toxic positivity, that it is something that is more subtle, and it can, because of course I'm thinking about an organization where, I mean, it's you could say it was in many ways a positive trait of their culture, that people were very encouraging and so on, but it also had side effects. And that's something I've learned, that when it comes to culture, many times the positives and the negatives, they are close neighbors, and it's often very, very interconnected.
Quickly on that, a distinction between the words and the definitions of positivity versus optimism. I think sometimes positivity can have limitations and just be a rosy-eyed colored glass for everything, versus optimism is grounded in reality. So we can both be optimistic, but also call a spade a spade of the hard realities of current market conditions, whatever it might be. So I think we need more cultures of optimism, which is finding a light in the tunnel, or believing that a light is out there. You know, optimism is hope, whereas positivity can be misguided at times.
That's super helpful. And I think that's something for, because of course, for us leading organizations, we want to, I mean, we don't want to get stuck and dwell on all our faults and not be able to move forward. We want to focus forward and we need to, and so on. And I think that's really, really helpful to use the frame of optimism and looking at the future with hope. But at the same time, being honest and open about what's not working, why it's hard, and so on. And yeah, that's love that so much. So I think one issue here when we talk about creating a speak up culture is that people carry experiences, and it might, for example, it might be, think a leader who's new in an organization where people have experiences of earlier leadership that really led to silence. So and I think we both seen that, for example, in Megan Wright's work, has been on this podcast and done incredible research on speaking up, and she gives this example of coming into a company where they had an issue, or the CEO had identified an issue with speaking up, and she goes and asks one of the first employees, and he says, "Oh, the last person who said something here disappeared," and that's apparently happened years ago, and I think one or two CEOs ago, and still, it was very much a part of the culture, and still caused fear. So when you think about that, what can leaders do in a situation where they are maybe new in the organization, they realize that there's a sense of silence here?
So I believe the technical term for this is baggage. And, you know, but it is very true. We walk into all of our experiences, especially as adults, but at any point, once we have experience, which could be even as children, you know, or even if you adopt a pet who's a rescue pet and has had previous abuse, they will apply that lens and that experience to everything. And do you blame them? Absolutely not. This is our sort of emotional backpack, or psychological safety, or speak up backpack. A colleague of mine, one of my first mentors, wrote a brilliant article on this, and she's a great author as well, Dr. Leanne Davey. She wrote an article on this called A Different Take on Psychological Safety. So obviously there is legitimate psychological danger where there is gaslighting, there's toxic positivity, and that happens. Oftentimes it serves to have a therapist or a coach or a mentor or a friend or someone to say, this is going on. Is it me, or is it the environment, or is it the leadership? Because it's very hard when we're in those toxic cultures. Oftentimes, toxic leaders make us feel as though it's us and not the environment and not their behavior. And so it does serve to have some objective perspective to figure out, okay, what's yours to own versus what's just objectively unhealthy about this, because that's really hard when you're in those environments. There's two other interesting things that Dr. Davey highlights. One is fear of aversive outcome, and the other is fear of oneself. So these are instances where there actually might be psychological safety, but because of you and your previous experiences, you might actually get in the way. Fear of aversive outcome is, let's say I have an idea and I share it at a team meeting, and the team goes, oh, that's interesting. Prove your work. What's the data? What's your research? Have you run any business case on this? And you're like, ugh, that seems like a lot of work. I don't really want to be put in the spotlight there. That's not necessarily lack of psychological safety. That's just a fear of putting oneself out there for the risk of being evaluated. That's just the work of leadership, right? Leadership without risk, leadership without fear, that's not really leadership. It's about stepping into the unknown. So that's one where it actually might be psychologically safe, but it's one's own fear of an aversive outcome when stepping in to that speak up highlight, that speak up spotlight. The other is fear from oneself. which means you've had previous experience, whether that's previous leaders, your family experience, if you're a minority population, and the baggage and the consequences of speaking up, considering who you are and where you come from, which isn't necessarily a lack of psychological safety. It's the backpack, the speak up or the emotional backpack you bring into a certain scenario. And so in that scenario, all leaders can do is continue to encourage and reward. And double down on that behavior and show someone, just as if you adopted a rescue pet that you believe in and want to have a life with, you know, you continue to encourage and reward until they get a new sort of wiring that it is both safe and worth it to speak up here. That's not always the case. You know, I've seen experiences where people bring too much of their past experiences to a new role or a new leader, and it just doesn't work. And it's less objectively about the leadership and the culture, and more around the fact that that person needs to heal, do some work, grow, and hopefully continue to do so in an environment that is psychologically safe.
That's really, really helpful, Stephen. And I'm thinking about for the person, and I think all of us, I mean, are in our different work environments, whatever level we might find ourselves, whether it's speaking up to our manager or speaking up to our shared executive team or to our shareholders or political leadership or whatever that might be. And I'm thinking about your personal story at the beginning of thinking about having a stutter and when we feel like we want to have a voice, but we're afraid because we don't know if we can do it in a way that not necessarily that people will not receive us well, but that we don't have what it takes in that sense. And I'm thinking about how, and as you know, I've had experiences of very, very destructive culture. And of course, in that culture, it's very much a culture of silence. And at the end of that journey, I would say I spoke up quite a lot. But what's been so interesting for me in that experience is afterwards, as this has been, you of course process things through your dreams, one of those recurring dreams have been standing up and speaking up about things. And I think that's so, so interesting how that is the thing that kind of I've been kind of coming with me for a long time after that. And I think about Jim Dietert's work on courage and where he says that, and he said to me in an interview that many times what people are the most proud of or have the most remorse about are experiences where they did speak up or chose not to do so. And that are some of the experiences that define us the most. So I gave a big, long-winded question here, but in terms of a person who feels like, I don't know if I have my voice, what is something that you can say to kind of encourage and perhaps also give some advice on how we can develop ourselves? And Mary Gently, Professor Mary Gently talks about it like our exercising our moral muscle memory, and Jim Dietert talks about it like becoming competently courageous. So what's your advice?
Yeah, so if you're someone who sees the value of using your voice and wants to use it more, but yet there's fear there, I mean, one, that's normal. That is a normal human experience. And I think the greatest thing you can do is bit by bit practice and step in and take these modest, reasonable risks until all of a sudden you've built more confidence, you've built more awareness around where it is safe and worth it to speak up, where it's not, appropriate timing. You know, I like to talk about speaking up and even giving feedback, as so often we approach it as if it's an automatic transmission, but we actually have a manual transmission. So in an automatic transmission, there's drive, there's park, there's reverse, right? Drive is speak up, you know, reverse is get out of there, and park is freeze. It's an oscillation between fight or flight. And I think so often when we are in drive, we should realize that we have, you know, as many as five more or less gears that we can try, that there isn't a one approach. You know, I've seen this in some organizations, especially law enforcement, military, where it's well, I speak up, I just do it now, as opposed to exercise some platinum rule, not just golden rule, right? Golden rule is treat others the way you wish to be treated. Well, just because you have something to say doesn't mean that it's the right time and the right condition for it to be heard. There's still work that we can do to exercise that platinum rule in treating others the way they wish to be treated. You know, what's going on for Tobias right now? How might I be able to say, hey, I have some feedback. Let me know when it's a good time. I think it'll help with this project or your leadership ability here. Just know that I have it and I want to share it. It doesn't mean I have license to just dump it on you right now, right? And for receivers of that speak up and receivers of that feedback to say, I really value the input. Can we do it Thursday morning? You know, unless you feel that it's imperative we do it beforehand. The other sort of very personal transformative experience for me growing up with a stutter, when I was 14 years old, I was at a summer camp. And one of the things that we did at that summer camp is we would put on a play, a theatrical production in front of the entire camp. And I was in the section of camp that had the pleasure, distinct pleasure and honor of essentially doing the Saturday Night Live skit of the summer. It was towards the end of the summer, and it was like the improv gag show, which I really love. I'm a big fan of comedy. I'm a big fan of improv, and I was very excited and enthusiastic to be part of this production. I had a fairly prominent role in it. We sang a parody song to Singing in the Rain. It was great. And because I had a fairly prominent role in this production, I, as well as I think two of my peers, were selected by the staff to go down to the dining hall and essentially do a live skit commercial to invite the entire camp, 450 people, to come up and watch this live production tonight, as if they had any other choice. But it's just one of these traditions, you sort of do a skit. And as we made up this skit on the spot and we're practicing it outside of the dining hall on sort of this grassy lawn, I stuttered over saying my character's last name. I just couldn't say it out loud. I struggled with it. The staff member and my peers were like, what's getting into you, right? Because most people don't know that I have a stutter, but I know I have a stutter and I have a challenge with it. Time was up. We went up and did this live skit, and my worst fear happened. Tobias, I stuttered in front of 450 people. Like, the thing that next to death, if in fact probably more than death, scared me, happened. I stuttered three times over trying to say this last name. It then came out finally, and I felt awful, but it was liberating because either nobody noticed or nobody cared. You know, my worst fear transpired. I literally, very sort of vulnerably, stuttered in front of hundreds of people, and I didn't die. Like, hooray. And so it was just this, you know, perhaps that was a little bit more than modest of a reasonable risk, but I did the thing. I took a risk. I put myself out there. You know, the cost of stuttering in that context was very little. I came out of that little skit sort of like, well, shaken, nervous, you know, shook, but at the same time, wonderfully liberated that the thing I feared most happened, and there was no repercussion. It was all good. I then went on that evening and performed in the production, and it went swimmingly well. I remember the feeling of jubilation and elation after the production with my friends. It was amazing. And so it was just that, you know, what's a modest, reasonable risk you can take? And you don't need to have a stutter to be afraid of speaking up or public speaking. Everyone is. It's a universal fear, because it's literally putting ourselves out there, being vulnerable, having that cortisol spike of I'm being judged and evaluated here. But just take modest, reasonable risks and tests. This is the value of Toastmasters clubs or a public speaking club, of just little bit. And before you know it, you've built up that muscle.
I love that, Stephen. Thank you so much for sharing that story. I think that was a really powerful story. And I think it goes to the point that all of us, we can find our voice. And for some of us, I would say myself included, I mean, I've been in environments where I learned that speaking up was dangerous, that it could have a real negative cost, that somebody would actually really treat me either harshly or gaslighting and whatever thing you could come up with.
That you are the problem as opposed to there being a problem.
Yeah, that I'm the problem and say that in front of other people as well, that I'm the problem. But still with that experience, I've still been able to find my voice. And I think even carrying those experiences, I've learned that I think I am a little bit more perhaps aware and thinking about when I face situations, when I face ethical dilemmas and think, perhaps I should speak up here because I don't want to be the person who stays silent when someone actually needs to act. So I just think it's heartening to hear that we can all find our voice. And I think as we talk about creating a speak up culture, I put a big responsibility on us as leaders to create the environment for it. But then there's also responsibility in all of us to also see how we can seek to take steps to develop in it. And of course, I think in great organizations, I think actually take the time to help your team members develop in speaking up, create opportunities for them to train doing it. And I think a great way to train doing it is just by having conversations on a regular basis when you ask, so what was it here? Where did we not act in line with our values or whatever? And in doing that and just kind of lowering the stakes, then I think by training that, it's also going to be so much easier and people will be much more competent to do it when the stakes are much higher. So thank you for that, Stephen.
My total pleasure. Thank you, Tobias. And I think it's around, you know, how can we create less fear? So it's even starting on really innocuous stuff, like building that muscle on things that the stakes are lower, such that when the stakes are higher, we welcome dissenting points of view. We welcome disagreement. We welcome people challenging and holding our most senior leaders to account. And then those senior leaders have the humility to say, you're onto something. Thank you. You know, I just did work a couple weeks ago with a great company headquartered out of Germany. And their CEO told a story of how he went to some people at a site and said, hey, let's go look at what our competitors are doing on this, that, and the other, to which his own employees, you know, skip levels down, said, sir, with respect, in our code of conduct, which you approved, we essentially don't spy on our competitors. That's not something that we do. So with all due respect, we're not going to do that. And he said, you're absolutely right. Thank you. As opposed to, come on, let's just come on. Like, as soon as you bend that, you're now bending your ethics. You're now bending your integrity. So I think, you know, practice when the stakes are lower. Make a big deal of the little things before little things become a big deal. And practice that such that when it is a big deal, we actually continue to encourage and reward people, especially when it's hardest to actually bring that truth forward.
Beautiful. So, Stephen, your new book is coming up, and when is it coming out?
Yes, October 3rd, it'll be out. Speak Up Culture, yes, it'll be out. I know North America on October 3rd, I hope, and lands beyond there October 3rd as well.
That's amazing. So, get Stephen's book. I guess it's available for pre-order.
Yes, it is. Yep.
Amazing. So, and what are other ways that people can connect with you? I know you are active on LinkedIn, and so how do people get connected with you?
Yes, thank you, Tobias. So yeah, the book is available for pre-order. So all the places that you like and don't like to buy your books, you can probably find Speak Up Culture there, and you can learn more at speakupculture.com. And like you said, I'm very active on LinkedIn. I believe I'm the only Stephen Shedletsky in the world right now. So all you handfuls of Shedletskys, be mindful in what you name your children. But yes, you can find me on LinkedIn, Stephen Shedletsky, and I'm on all the other socials. Shed Inspires, SHED Inspires is my typical handle on the other places.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Stephen.
My pleasure. I've been looking forward to this, Tobias, and it proved to be a great conversation, so I appreciate it. I hope it helps your listeners.
I'm totally sure that it does. So thank you. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this conversation, it really means the world to us if you would share, rate, and review it on iTunes. We're super grateful for all the 5-star reviews and generous comments that we received so far. It really helps us take the message of purpose and integrity to a wider audience. And finally, don't forget to grab your free PDF on leadingtransformationalchange.com. See you in 2 weeks.